Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
It's a final Friday of June. TGIF, everybody. Paul Lindsay with you.
Goodbye, June.
She would be the Lindsay. I would be the Paul.
Thank you for clarifying.
Sometimes people need clarification. If they haven't been hanging out with us for a while, and we've been doing this for a while now. A while without sports as well. Like,
true dat.
Like real sports. Not the ping pong from Kazakhstan and the launching of farm animals in other third world countries. Actual sports.
God,
and
you really are missing sports.
I know. We've had some golf and we've had some baseball. And in about an hour, we're going to find out the actual schedule for the NBA, which is crazy. Yeah, as they restart.
At 4?
Yeah. And at some point next week, we'll get the baseball schedule.
Nice.
And we're still racing NASCAR, and Premier League Soccer is back. We'll talk about that coming up at 3:37, the momentum for being the first sports leagues back, as well as at 3:18, USA Today baseball writer Gabe Lax will join us to talk about sports leagues and the responsibilities of opening and perhaps having to roll things back, which he thinks might have to happen, but not sure if you can put the toothpaste back in the tube at this point.
Yeah, but seems like the train is going down the tracks and there's not a lot of brakes.
That's true.
Around.
You better get out of the way. Yeah. But we'll talk with Gabe Lax, the end of USA Today, coming up here at 3:18. Let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
So, Tom Petty used to sing, waiting is the hardest part. And when it comes to the NHL, the waiting for the hub decision is becoming the hardest part, as we got word early today that unless the NHL decides to throw us a big curveball here in the next couple of hours during the draft lottery, that the hub decision on the two cities that will host the NHL's Stanley Cup playoffs in the most untraditional of traditional ways possible will probably not come tonight and maybe actually come over the weekend and just kind of get buried.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're looking at a lot of the spikes across the country here in the United States, and clearly with the elimination of Vancouver yesterday, that puts a little more emphasis on Edmonton and Toronto as possible destinations as well. But I'm still feeling confident. I'm feeling good about this. But I wish we were finding out today.
Yeah, I think it would help just everyone just kind of settle in. But the NHL is controlling its narrative for sure with the draft lottery tonight, of which we mentioned yesterday, Vegas Golden Knights fans, don't sweat it. Not really a thing for you.
It doesn't concern us at this point in time.
Except, you know, you might see the number one pick go to Los Angeles or San Jose, because both are in the draft lottery because they did not make the postseason.
And both of those teams need help.
Yes, they do. They certainly do. So as we wait for the draft lottery tonight, we also have to wait on the announcements of the hub. Still five cities still in the running, including us here in Las Vegas, which still seems to be kind of towards the front of the runners. We still have LA, Chicago, and then the two Canadian cities in Edmonton and Toronto. So we'll see if that happens over the weekend. Maybe they make a surprise announcement tonight, or maybe they wait till Monday. But yes, waiting is the hardest part.
What? What?
Number two.
Okay, so as we live in these changing times, this actually affects me a little bit as we talk about terms and uses of language and things like that that people might find slightly offensive or more offensive than others and whatnot. And Oregon State and Oregon, of which one of those schools I attended, the latter, Oregon, announced today that they will no longer use the term Civil War in connection with their sports rivalry. Having gone to school there, I sat through many a Civil War contest, whether it was wrestling or women's softball or basketball or certainly the football game, which many of the articles say that they do not have a trophy. But there is a trophy that was unearthed in a basement.
What is it?
It's a wooden platypus.
A platypus?
It's a platypus, yes. Not a turducken, but a platypus.
I don't even know what a turducken is.
A turducken.
I don't know what that is.
You know what a turducken is?
Literally, that is the first time I've heard that word come out of anybody's mouth.
It's a turkey with a duck stuffed inside with a chicken stuffed inside. A turducken.
What is my palate, Paul? You've learned a lot about each other.
It's a Thanksgiving thing.
I know, but within a bird.
Yes, a turducken.
Seems a little redundant.
Anyway, it was a platypus, and Oregon State, understanding the power of the words and symbolism associated with the Civil War, which was kind of spurred on by former Oregon Duck quarterback and Pittsburgh Steelers perennial backup, Dennis Dixon, who now works for Nike, said, hey, you know, we could probably just change this. It's not going to be craziness by any means that we make the move, but it's the right thing to do. And I get it. I mean, listen, as an alum of Oregon, it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
It's not like that we went roaring into every clash with Oregon State, which sucks.
Tell us how you really feel.
Well, come on. It's still a rivalry.
Obviously.
You know, but, you know, you're like, meh. You're just kind of like, is it a Civil War game? No, it's a big game.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's branded that way, so to speak. But
we have to get the platypus involved. We have to. I get it. The Civil War, everything is up for review, and I don't blame them one bit. Why don't we get this platypus involved? We gotta come up with a really catchy phrase.
And being an in-state, I mean, if you're an in-state kid in Oregon State, and even one of the football players, Jaden Grant, texted the AD saying, you know, I have an emotional attachment to the name because I'm an in-state kid, and it really wasn't thought about that way. I mean,
sure.
There are civil wars fought in other countries. It's just a matter of the world that we live in.
We don't own the term Civil War.
We just don't. But in the United States, it has a different connotation
yeah.
of what it is. So, unfortunately, what's going to happen is, and I get it, and I don't have any problem with it, what's going to happen is they're going to workshop something that's just even worse.
It's going to be great because if it involves the platypus, it is a winner.
All right, but the schools are only 60 miles apart in Oregon. It's not like here in Nevada where we have UNR, which is an 8-hour drive north of here, north of UNLV. I mean, there's rivalry, but it's a very distant rivalry, and it's a battle over a cannon.
Yeah, you and I would walk those 1,000 miles to just see you tonight.
It's about 400, but
close enough.
It's going to be just something weird. I don't know.
If it has the platypus, I'm here for it. I'm all in on that rivalry. Anything else is a failure.
Yeah, it's just going to be a couple. I mean, seriously, like, what is it? The Iowa State in Iowa, it's the Cy-Hawk. The Cy-Hawk
trophy.
We
don't recognize Iowa in my household.
But that's what it is. The rival, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you have the Iron Bowl with Auburn and Alabama.
Yeah, we all have those rivalry games. You got Paul Bunyan's axe between the University of Minnesota and Wisconsin. Close enough.
Yeah, and it's the Apple Cup in Washington. But the state animal in Oregon is the beaver. But it's the Oregon State Beavers, so you're not going to have the Battle of the Beaver.
I know, but that's why the platypus is perfect, because it's a cross between the two.
Sure.
It's a beaver with a bill.
Right. Yeah, and it's just called the big game, Stanford and Cal.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just hoping it's not something lame. Listen, if you're going to make the change. I'm good with it again. Just don't make it lame. I mean,
quack, quack.
Just don't make it lame, please. That's all I beg. All right, moving on.
Number 3.
Okay, Lindsay loves this idea. I'm not crazy about it.
what else is new?
The San Francisco. No, we're on point with a lot of things, but this one I'm not nuts about this one. And maybe it's because I read what happened at the European Soccer Club when they did this. The San Francisco Giants are going to combat the lack of fans by telling season ticket holders they could send in images of themselves that will be placed on cardboard cutouts in front of their usual seats in the stands.
I'm here for it. 100%.
The team, again, because they need to workshop things, is calling it the Giants Fan Cutout Program.
Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue as easy. That doesn't...
The gif...
Right? Why don't you like this idea?
I just think it's
What's your issue?
It's just lame.
I have tissues here
it's
for your
lame.
Issues.
It's lame. It's just lame.
I know, but it's creative, though,
no,
Paul.
No, it's just lame. You know what they did? So, listen.
This is like Flat Stanley.
I'm sure that they will... I know Flat Stanley, but it's not Flat Stanley. The idea of... They put Osama bin Laden in in that soccer stadium in Europe. It's because so clearly people aren't paying attention. There's no fact check. There's no fact check here. Plus, there are many other things that you could do. It costs you, if you're not a season ticket holder, $99. So if you're a season ticket holder, send in your face, and we're going to put you in the stands.
Yeah.
So who's going to be out? Who's going to be running through the stands when a gust of wind happens at Pac Bell Park, which it does?
Yes.
And it literally looks like one of those games where it's like, what is it? It's a guess who. That game that little
great
kids play.
Game.
Right, where
love
they flip the cards down and up and look for matches of people.
A simpler clue.
It's going to look like a bunch of flat dominoes across the stands.
I know, but even if it fails, it's going to be can't-miss TV. Could you imagine them flying around or, say, like a foul ball just lasers down the right side baseline
and takes guy in somebody, the face?
Yeah, and takes that. You could place wagers, Paul. You're a degenerate gambler.
There's some amusement there, but why don't they just get those wacky inflatable wavy guys then and put them in the outfield and just fire them up and they just be waving around
like
crazy arms.
I know. I agree, but I think this is a good creative way to help fill the emptiness in the seats around the stadium. And I think some people will definitely will have to be, it's not spell checked, it'll be picture checked for, but I think people get creative, get weird.
Yeah.
Put a cool hat on, cross those eyes.
I guess.
Funny ears behind. I don't know.
I'm not crazy about it.
All right. Well, no fun Friday on Paul's
docket.
That's right.
Just not buying it.
All right.
Moving on.
Number four.
And I'm just a party pooper. Just like
the
NFL. The NFL, who canceled its Hall of Fame game between the Cowboys and Steelers, apparently is not going to be the only preseason game that gets called off. On her sister station, WEEI, this morning, former NFL tight end Christian Fauria says he has heard plenty of scuttlebutt the league will cancel two of each team's four preseason games to buy them a little bit more time in trying to get some of the teaching done and some of the offseason work done because meetings, you know, Zoom meetings with 90 guys can be a little bit tough.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Zoom meetings can be a little tough for 10 minutes, but I'm not really hurt by the fact that two preseason games have been eliminated. Are you?
No, I don't think it's going to do too much. It's going to eliminate some of the competition that I think storylines that we like to get into.
Absolutely. Well, and there's implications for Hard Knocks, which is taking place in L.A. this year as well.
Yeah, that could be a little bit kind of condensed and boring. A little bit more about... Could you
more
imagine?
Zoom meetings.
Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks could literally just be, like, the first episode could just be one big Zoom meeting.
Right.
Like,
that's what everybody needs.
Just cut from one Zoom meeting to the next Zoom meeting to the next Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
That is not compelling television.
Well, they're going to have to make it.
Yeah. You know, it's just going to be a bunch of surfing shots and...
Yeah. Hang loose,
people,
bro.
People barbecuing and, hey, look, we have a new stadium. Hey.
Let's go fly a kite in the
beach.
So
do we in Las Vegas. We have a new stadium, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, moving on. I really have nothing for that one.
Number five.
Sit down.
Come on, Paul, wake
just
up.
The NFL. The NFL is going to cancel two preseason games. It's like, all right, more par for the course at this point.
We've been asking for that for years.
We've been asking for a lot of things. And just, oh, look, another thing's been canceled. Oh, look, another thing's been canceled.
Update.
Oh, look, another thing's been canceled.
No wonder you're a party pooper.
I'm like, damn.
Let's number some- four.
There you
number
go.
Four.
Well, here's some happy news. They have dotted the I's and crossed the lowercase t's when it comes to the NBA, and they have finalized the agreement to restart the 2019-20 season. Even as we see a few more people test positive for coronavirus, that is pretty much going to happen because they accept that there is no perfect solution at this point. And within the next 45 minutes, they're going to release the schedule for the NBA for the remainder of the play-in season and how things are going to go, which
right.
We've been told that there might possibly be triple headers or quadruple headers in Orlando when they start returning to play here in about 4 weeks.
Right, because unlike the NHL plan, the NBA isn't jumping directly to the playoffs. They have some burnout games to decide basically that eighth seed in the Western Conference side. But... I'm excited. I'm excited to find out the schedule and to get things rolling.
I just want to be able to watch basketball in the middle of the afternoon. I think that's something that you know, as you like to say, Lindsay, we like to get weird. And it's okay to be weird. And this is what the NBA is going to have to do to get back on track and capture the imagination of the watching public and just get everybody back in the mindset that, yes, we will be playing basketball in August.
Yeah.
Of all times. Normally, we're getting ready for summer league here, and that's just kind of the normal for Las Vegas. We don't get that. But now you're going to see it's not going to be all these free agent guys from Europe and Asia and here in the States, G League guys that are dominating the courts. It's going to be the legitimate star players of the NBA.
Right, and that's why this fall is really, it's an unprecedented situation in the history of sports. We'll never have this kind of pressure-packed moment, but we got to get there first. And to get there, we got to wear our masks.
It's going to be straight up overload, I think, for a lot of people. There's so much sports. It's going to be like living in Ready Player One. You're just going to put a helmet on and just the whole world's just going to expand around you.
We're going to have to upgrade the RAM. We are.
Something.
Don't want any lag time.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
All the screens.
Get some panoramic Wi-Fi in here.
Right.
That would be very helpful.
That would be incredibly useful.
Yeah, right now we just have one TV on golf.
Great shot, sir.
Wonderful shot.
Wait, let's see the result.
Oh, God,
I have a good eye. Just inside about a 12-foot putt there.
That's a gimme in my circles.
Oh, really?
Depends on the day.
Not what I saw on Monday.
Depends on the wind. There's your check down, your five biggest stories of the afternoon, powered by Radio.com Sports. Coming up next, we're going to talk about sports leagues and the responsibilities of reopening with USA Today baseball writer Gabe Lax. He's up next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay, Playmakers here on this Friday. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thank you.
The leagues are all moving forward with their reopening plans. The NBA is going to release a schedule here in the next hour or so. NHL is looking at hub cities. Major League Baseball is going to reveal some schedules too. And joining us to talk about this and the responsibilities that these sports leagues have with the reopening process is USA Today baseball writer Gabe Lax. Gabe, thanks for coming in.
Hey, no problem. How are you guys tonight?
Not so bad, Gabe. Glad to be talking with you.
Yeah, for sure, Gabe, we're definitely happy to see sports come back and see these schedules push forward. But, you know, in the column that you wrote for USA Today a couple of days ago, you mentioned some of the responsibilities, certainly, and the things that the sports leagues have to bring into consideration when it comes to restarting. At this point, though, even though Adam Silver did come out today and say, hey, if we do have some cases in the bubble, we might have to pause play, is it way too far down the road at this point for me to just, I'm going to start saying cliches here, you know, put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak, because we're all full steam to make sure that this all happens one way or another, whether people get sick or not?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's just going to have to remain really flexible. I think the one thing, it's so interesting, we're so used to these kind of up and down outcomes, you know, yes or no, safe or unsafe. And, you know, just in talking to even, you know, the experts on this stuff, the answer that keeps coming up more often than not is, I don't know. You know, you're talking about people who have been working in epidemiology or infectious diseases for half a century. You know, it's why they call it, you know, the novel coronavirus. I mean, it's brand new. Nobody knows what it's going to do or how it's going to manifest itself. And obviously, the sports piece of this is just so unknown in terms of how it may or may not spread during athletic competition, and obviously the ability of the athletes to distance themselves both when they're around each other and when they're away from the court or away from the field. I mean, it's, you know, you have to be prepared for anything. And that's to say, it could go really smoothly and somebody's hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy on October 12th. Or it could go really poorly, and maybe they shut it down. And my gosh, there's just so many scenarios that the leagues are going to have to prepare for, whether it's an outbreak that affects just one team, and then what do you do, or, you know, all the rest of it, competitive equity issues. We're really sailing into the great unknown. And I think, you know, the best mentality for fans especially is just really – take it one game at a time, and if you're able to watch a game or two, great. And just know that, the plug could get pulled. It's just such a great unknown right now.
And one of the things that you discuss in your article as well, as we're all navigating the great unknown and the importance of messaging and communication that has really caused a lot of confusion, not just from the sports leagues, but just as a society in general. But the almighty dollar is undefeated, Gabe, and the sports leagues are businesses. But how impactful do you think a media blitz from the leagues and their sponsors about wearing masks, about the impact on the sports season and how much, you know, wearing the mask, taking the precautions would enable the sports to return? Do you think that they really missed the mark there?
Yeah, I really do. I mean, at this point, I don't think it's too late for the mask thing necessarily. I mean, I know Nick Saban did a promo with the Alabama mascot, you know, kind of a lighthearted, but hey, put on the mask kind of thing. And, you know, that is kind of a recent strong recommendation. So I think that, you know, that you could still see that kind of messaging. But I think the mark was really missed in April and May when everybody was kind of, you know, banging the drum to reopen, you know, both people who feel that, you know, their civil rights are being infringed upon because they can't go to TGI Fridays, along with politicians who, you know, somehow just feel that, like, you just get the sense that their political futures would be enhanced if suddenly the economy were, you know, were kickstarted and everybody just went right out and started spending money again. You know, the overly simple terms I've been putting it in is, you know, look, you can have your $15 margarita in May, or you can have your football in September, but you're probably not going to get both. And I think we're starting to see that now. It's so unfortunate to see the spikes in these places that opened up. I mean, it's, you know, and again, it's going to take years to kind of, you know, drill down into the cause and the correlation and all that. But, yeah, it's just, you know, it clearly opportunities were missed in messaging and otherwise, and people being kind of unprepared for the long haul. And now we've had setbacks, and that's kind of undeniable at this point.
USA Today columnist Gabe Lax joining us here on the Playmakers, Paul and Lindsay, on this Friday afternoon. And Gabe, I'm on the side of how fans are going to react on this, and you hear me out really quickly. As these teams and these leagues start moving forward, and, you know, we saw English Premier League soccer, and we've seen NASCAR come back, and NASCAR's dealt with its own challenges as well, and golf is starting to see the bubble, you know, be pricked a little bit more here. And as these leagues get rolling here, and if there are stoppages, I think fans are going to blame first. They're going to blame the leagues, because it's easy to say I told you so afterwards, because early on it was about all these governors, and they're still coming out today saying, hey, yes, you can absolutely play professional sports in our state. You can, while everything around them is still getting ignored. And they're going to look at the leagues and go, well, listen, you ignored all the signs, even though these politicians, regardless of which side of the aisle they were on, said, no, it was totally cool for you to come here. And the NBA is taking a major risk, at least I think, in going into Florida because of just where they stand right now. And I don't think a postponement would hurt them at all.
Yeah, and, you know, all of this is so intertwined. You know, you talk about the almighty dollar. You know, obviously, NBA and Disney have a very close working relationship, and Adam Silver even kind of shouted them out today in his remarks, you know, our partners at Disney and all that. And, you know, you kind of could see this coming, that Florida was going to have a spike at some point. It's coming at the worst possible time for the NBA. It's very tricky, though. What's harder to do, to go all in on one place and try to make that as safe as possible and thread the needle and get your players into this bubble, or to rely on 28 different markets and being able to do your business in all of those with Major League Baseball? You know, it's tricky. There's really no one best way to do it. I guess for the purpose of not that any of us ever want to do this again, go through this again, but it is kind of interesting, the different approaches within NBA and baseball, and we'll see which one works better. And, you know, again, there's just no best way necessarily even to say what is the move, because all it takes is, you know, one person acting irresponsibly and bringing the virus into their clubhouse or into their locker room and into the population. So it's so tricky, and again, it's going to take really years to unpack everything from this pandemic, and I think too from a sports perspective as well, once we're through this thing. And again, I hate to be such a Debbie Downer all the time, but 2021 is going to be, you know, maybe not equally as challenging, but certainly, you know, significantly challenging. It's going to be different. Who knows what the fan situation will be, if they'll be fully up and running. But, yeah, we're looking at a, you know, kind of a different reality for the next year or two. You know, it'd be great if a vaccine came along, but people also forget, too, it takes a really long time to produce and distribute enough vaccine to make it, you know, effective in the public sphere. So it's, gosh, really, not to go back to the cliche, but one day at a time, one week at a time, one month at a time, and then kind of go from there. But, yeah, it's some people think, oh, they shouldn't be doing this, but I think it's probably good that they are, just because you do need to find out how it's going to work, what does and what doesn't work, because, you know, we'll be living with this thing for quite a while, it seems like.
And that comes down to really the personal decision for each player, because as I wholeheartedly agree that the spikes that we're seeing across the country, but especially in Florida, could not come at a worse time. And we've already seen a few notable NBA players saying I'm out for different reasons. But do you think, or do you anticipate an uptick in players taking a step back, especially with the recent news that we've kind of gotten this week, at least in the world of basketball, where we're kind of heading in right now?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of anticipate as much, especially with, you know, they talk bubble with the NBA, and it truly isn't, you know, it's, you're having Disney workers coming in from the outside and, you know, coming from a place where it's obviously spiking in a lot of places, and, you know, who knows these workers' ability to social distance in their home living situations, or if they live with an essential worker who, you know, works in a hospital. There's so many myriad possibilities. So, yeah, it's it does seem like setbacks are inevitable. The ability to kind of isolate and limit them is going to be, I mean, it seems really challenging already, you know, with the little outbreak in Phillies camp and Phillies and Blue Jays players fraternizing in Florida while at their training facilities. It's kind of staggering to think about, but, you know, hopefully everybody gets, you know, lucky launching this thing. And then once they're relatively, you know, inside the semi bubble, that they make the right decisions. And again, the good thing with the NBA is that the population will be diminishing over time. I mean, if they can get the, I guess it's what, 8 games of the regular season over with, then suddenly, boom, that's a pretty large percentage of people leaving. You get through the first round of the playoffs, and then suddenly you're down to, you know, a far smaller amount of players involved. So that'll be interesting to see if they can get through that first, navigate that first window. Baseball, obviously, it's going to be a little tougher. You're talking about 750 plus players for the course of 60 regular season games and then the playoffs. So it's again, different seas that these leagues have to navigate, but they've definitely done their homework. I think they've put themselves in as good a position as they can. Now it's just a matter of executing and really a lot of good fortune.
Gabe Lax, USA Today baseball writer and columnist. Gabe, thanks for coming on with us, man. Appreciate the insight.
Yeah, appreciate it. Anytime. We'll hope to see you guys down the road.
All right. Fantastic. Gabe Lax of USA Today. And as the NBA starts moving forward, I think, you know, we need to realize, too, and especially for the NHL, too, who considers, you know, Los Angeles as still a possible hub for whatnot. You know, he talked about the relationship between Disney and the NBA. Disneyland decided not to open up.
Right, but that's in California versus the Florida.
Correct.
But still, yes, there's a lot of puzzling aspects that you would think would be counterintuitive to moving forward. But as Gabe said, and as all, we're all kind of realizing, we're gonna have to figure it out at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as I said, it's all about players taking that risk for themselves and making that decision.
I think the weird play about what's happening now, we work in the industry, we talk about sports, we follow sports, we cover sports, we talk to athletes and coaches, we talk to writers and things like that. We're on the inside. I think the weird part about this is as we start reopening and everything opens up, that there was such a... You and I talk about weird a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about getting weird and trying different things. And while I'm not crazy about cardboard cutouts in San Francisco, what I would have been a little bit more excited about is that as the NHL tries to do the traditional Stanley Cup and award it in the most traditional way possible.
Integrity.
And the same way with the NBA, that I'm not sure the traditional playoff format really needed to be played out at this point. They were trying to be as fair as possible to all these teams that were kind of in contention and
yes.
not in contention. And it really feels like, and this is the best way I can put this, is that you're an 8-year-old in third grade and you're having a birthday party, and if you don't invite everybody in the class, someone will get mad and feel left out.
Right.
And that's what this feels like. Even though we only have the budget for 10 kids, we still have to invite 28 because it's the nice and right thing to do.
Right. And to be honest, that extension really doesn't bug me that much, but it seemed like the NBA was already in a mindset to change up their playoffs, and they're usually the ones at the forefront of all the innovation and trying to make tweaks to make their product more viewable, more viral, and everything else. Whereas the NHL, they'll do that to an extent, but as I dropped in, the integrity word, there's something to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'm not saying that there isn't integrity in the NBA playoffs, but there's clearly been evidence over these last few years that it really... eight teams on each side for playoffs in general, that's probably a little watered down at this point, considering all the super teams that have sprouted up everywhere. So I don't know. It's a concession, but you're with Disney. They want programming. So guess
right,
what?
No,
everyone come
no,
on down.
Absolutely. They're going to invite as many teams as they can. The NHL is going to do its play into. And, you know, but, you know, it's crazy because for as much as baseball's got bad mouth leading up to the run here, and this is where I disagree with JR, who you'll hear at 7 o'clock here. JR thinks it's a faux season that's coming up, 60 games. But at least baseball's actually going to try something different. Of all the leagues that aren't, again, we've been bashing them, like bashing
they deserved
them
it.
Over the head with like Lincoln Continental sized hammers for the talk about money and, you know, will they or won't they? And we're not going to do this. We're not going to do this. I mean, they're still adopting a designated hitter for everybody.
Right.
They are playing a shortened season. They're changing up their schedule and an extra innings. It's not going to be a home run derby, but they're going to start players on second base, which is what they've been experimenting with anyway.
Right.
So for everyone that said, wow, I'm so happy the NBA and so happy the NHL, and they're doing these things, it was baseball that was the one that kind of went, you know what, we're going to change things up as much as we can and just set the labor garbage aside.
And you're right. We should give kudos to Major League Baseball because each league is at its own point of compromise. I think in the scale of like purity of the game, baseball is probably one, then goes the NHL, then goes the NFL, then goes the NBA, just in terms of we want to keep things as the same as we possibly
can. Sure, tradition's
a
big deal.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I also think they put themselves into that situation. That was the only way they could go. So, of course, it's a great option now. Of course, we should applaud them for taking it, but they were backed into it. But they did it themselves.
Sure. Up next, we talk about these leagues, and we've talked about this on a few occasions, but things are much different now as we start seeing everything roll back. That momentum that should have been gained for being some of the first leagues to return to play. We'll explore that next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Lindsay, on this Friday afternoon, we've been here since day one. Even when sports went away 100 plus days ago.
Yes.
We've still been chugging along like the little engine that could. And there was, at this one moment, this kind of heartbeat. And it started with baseball because they just come out of spring training and there was this whole idea back in late March of the whole idea of hub cities. They were going to play in Arizona and Florida, maybe a little bit of Texas.
Yeah, no disruption.
Exactly. And play baseball. And it just kind of went poof. It went away. It was like, well, I'm not quite sure. Maybe there's money involved. Maybe something's happened. And it kind of got swept under the rug. And baseball kind of lost any momentum it had to be the first back. And then we started screaming to the high heavens about the NFL. And the NFL was all like, yeah, we're going to stick to the schedule.
Yep.
And they did, for the most part.
Well, the start of their new season was a long ways out, still
sure.
is, in
but
a
they
way.
Still rolled through, you know, virtual camps. They had the successful draft. And now we're starting to see the NFL, they're looking at the calendar that they got for Christmas time. And
some
now
days
it's,
have passed, have they?
And now it's almost July, and they're canceling games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, teams were just allowed in their facilities. Now, they're still moving forward. And I'm not saying that they don't have momentum, but it felt like the NFL was just kind of doing its thing.
Bulldozing their way.
And the NFL didn't have to gain anything by sticking to the schedule. They just had to remind people that, listen, we're still the big dog around here, and that's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
But for the other leagues that started coming back or starting to be first back, it feels like there's not a lot of momentum that's going to be gained. NASCAR did so with social justice. That's where they've made their bid so far, and and by the they've done a really mostly good job in that space.
They've handled the situation the best they could with the information that they had at the times that they did.
Right. So NASCAR is back, but again, it didn't feel like there was a lot of momentum when they came back.
There were a lot of rain delays. Remember,
there were so many rain delays, and you know it was like German soccer and even Premier League. And I'm a Premier League guy.
Yeah,
but
you have a soccer jersey.
Right,
you wore
but
it.
But Liverpool winning early, it just kind of deflated the rest. It's like, okay, well, now there's just soccer.
Right.
Like Liverpool won the league, and it was well due for Liverpool fans. Hey, you will never walk alone, by the way. For them to come back, that's their thing.
I assume it's an inside club saying.
It's kind of like, okay, soccer's back, and it's great. But still, the excitement's just kind of, it's, you know, it's 6 a.m. here on the West Coast.
Exactly.
5:30 when it kicks off. And so even golf, it was like, and they had some momentum, but it's all kind of feeling flat. Like if there was something to be had, it just it just never quite happened
right.
for the right reasons for other places. And we talked about the NHL. When they came back, they had this big...
They were the first ones to put out a plan.
They had everything in place to go, yep, we're coming back, we're coming back, we're coming back.
And we haven't had an update since.
And it just kind of feels like this slow little trickle, and we've joked about it, where it feels like this kind of weird reality show
yeah.
that they're trying to stretch out as long as possible to gather what kind of pseudo momentum that they may have.
And that's the thing, Paul. Like, you could approach this kind of conundrum from multiple angles, but I think not only was it a missed opportunity for baseball itself to not get back on the field right away, and granted, we've beat that horse way too much already, but none of the sports that came back right away are the sports that we instantaneously gravitate towards as an American sports viewing audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love golf. You love golf. You love soccer. I tolerate soccer. You know, that we can piques the interest, but it's nothing where you're like, yeah, I'm going to show up and do this, because I don't know if I would show up for every golf match if all the sports were going on. But that's what I'm saying. If baseball had taken that, I think as a viewing public, we're much more in it with sports because it's one of those major sports. But because they weren't there, the slipper didn't fit. Nobody was there. So now we're just dealing with the sports that are great to have around, that some of us pay attention to, but not the diehard fandom.
Sure, and maybe we're waiting for the big star. Like, Tiger's not playing. Hasn't played, so there's no, and you know, NASCAR's been trying to redevelop stars forever, but mm-hmm. they're still anonymous because most of them, again, they're racing in masks. It's not like, it's not like, hey, it's blah, blah, blah for Coca-Cola, or, you know, out there, you know, making jokes on Saturday Night Live or wherever it happens to be, you know,
right.
Soccer has the international appeal, but again, it's those stars are not household names at 5:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to make those stars. And then again, the advantages that were out there. Maybe that's why we're all talking about Tom Brady playing catch in the park and breathing on other people, because at least there's some big marquee name out there that people can latch on to and at least kind of live
just
by
familiarity, knowledge,
live vicariously through. Which is why that's it.
That's what it is
for the folks that missed sports, and that it's coming back. It doesn't feel like the void has been filled yet for a lot of folks.
It's been too niche. Culture. We need the monoculture. We need the Game of Thrones of sports leagues. But right now, we're just kind of dealing with offshoots. But I think that reasoning's absolutely sound, because everybody knows Tom Brady. Everybody knows where Tom Brady is right now, where he was last season, how it's different, and what the situation is. And so everybody has an opinion.
Just that chugging down the track, and I'm like, listen, I follow Trevor Bauer on Twitter, but Trevor Bauer walk up to me on the street.
Yeah,
dude,
exactly.
Would literally have to tweet at me and say, hey, I'm standing next to you.
Yeah, prove it.
I mean, the momentum just kind of lost. Hopefully, as the larger sports leagues come back, and again, the NBA is going to release its schedule today, and hopefully the NHL will get off its butt and just give us the hub cities and just make that happen. And
that would be great.
You know, and we can get back that momentum, because, you know, the NFL is still the NFL right now, and they're still eating up the scenery, whether they want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
They just kind of are.
That's true.
Coming up next, our Friday Pep Talk.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
It's Friday. Got to give you a little pick-me-up in the middle of the show here. Tony Cordasco is going to swing in at 4 o'clock. Join us for hour number two. Talk a little bit more sports. But first, our daily pep talk.
It is time for our daily pep talk, and it comes to us from the Tube of You with a speech from U.S. Navy Admiral William H. McRaven. All about making your bed. Let's run that tape, Marcus.
If you want to change the world, start off by making your bed. If you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task, and another, and another. And by the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that the little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you'll never be able to do the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you will come home to a bed that is made. That you made. And a made bed gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. To pass SEAL training, there are a series of long swims that must be completed. One is the night swim. Before the swim, the instructors joyfully brief the students on all the species of sharks that inhabit the waters off San Clemente. They assure you, however, that no student has ever been eaten by a shark, at least not that they can remember. But you are also taught that if a shark begins to circle your position, Stand your ground. Do not swim away. Do not act afraid. And if a shark, hungry for a midnight snack, darts towards you, then summons up all your strength and punch him in the snout, and he will turn and swim away. There are a lot of sharks in the world. If you hope to complete the swim, you will have to deal with them. So if you want to change the world, don't back down from the sharks. Over a few weeks of difficult training, my SEAL class, which started with 150 men, was down to just 42. There were now six boat crews of seven men each. I was in the boat with the tall guys, but the best boat crew we had was made up of the little guys, the Munchkin crew, we called them. No one was over 5 foot five. The Munchkin boat crew had one American Indian, one African American, one Polish American, one Greek American, one Italian American, and two tough kids from the Midwest. They out-paddled, outran, and outswam all the other boat crews. The big men in the other boat crews would always make good-natured fun of the tiny little flippers the Munchkins put on their tiny little feet prior to every swim. But somehow these little guys from every corner of the nation and the world always had the last laugh, swimming faster than everyone and reaching the shore long before the rest of us. SEAL training was a great equalizer. Nothing mattered but your will to succeed, not your color, not your ethnic background, not your education, not your social status. If you want to change the world, measure a person by the size of their heart, not by the size of their flippers. The ninth week of training is referred to as Hell Week. It is 6 days of no sleep, constant physical and mental harassment, and one special day at the Mud Flats. The Mud Flats are an area between San Diego and Tijuana where the water runs off and creates the Tijuana Sloughs, a swampy patch of terrain where the mud will engulf you. It is on Wednesday of Hell Week that you paddle down to the Mud Flats and spend the next 15 hours trying to survive this freezing cold, the howling wind, and the incessant pressure to quit from the instructors. As the sun began to set that Wednesday evening, my training class, having committed some egregious infraction of the rules, was ordered into the mud. The mud consumed each man till there was nothing visible but our heads. The instructors told us we could leave the mud if only five men would quit. Only five men, just five men, and we could get out of the oppressive cold. Looking around the mud flat, it was apparent that some students were about to give up. It was still over 8 hours till the sun came up. Eight more hours of bone-chilling cold. The chattering teeth and the shivering moans of the trainees were so loud, it was hard to hear anything. And then one voice began to echo through the night. One voice raised in song. The song was terribly out of tune, but sung with great enthusiasm. One voice became two. Two became three, and before long, everyone in the class was singing. The instructors threatened us with more time in the mud if we kept up the singing, but the singing persisted, and somehow the mud seemed a little warmer, and the wind a little tamer, and the dawn not so far away. If I have learned anything in my time traveling the world, it is the power of hope, the power of one person, a Washington, a Lincoln, King, Mandela, and even a young girl from Pakistan, Malala. One person can change the world by giving people hope. So if you want to change the world, start each day with a task completed. Find someone to help you through life. Respect everyone. Know that life is not fair and that you will fail often. But if you take some risks, step up when the times are the toughest, face down the bullies, lift up the downtrodden, and never, ever give up. If you do these things, the next generation and the generations that follow will live in a world far better than the one we have today. And what started here will indeed have changed the world for the better.
Yeah, nothing like singing in the mud.
All starts with making the bed.
Yeah, goodness gracious.
Greatness is on the horizon.
Right, make your bed every morning. My son makes his bed every morning. At least I want him to. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. It gets done every so often. I cut him a little slack.
Yeah.
But when he doesn't do it, I do it for him.
And for those of us that have trouble just getting things done in general, like myself, it's a great way to boost yourself into the day by having an accomplishment and having a good thing to walk back home to.
Sure, without the lists, and a lot of people make lists of, you know, hey, I need to get this stuff done, this stuff done, this stuff done. Sometimes you don't finish that list by the end of the day. And,
or you lose the list.
Right, and it's like, okay, the checkmark of accomplishments isn't there anymore. So how do I judge, mm-hmm. you know, what happened? And it's usually something we all like, something physical, something to look at. There's no doubt about it. Always important to have some sort of milestones, I believe.
Yep, especially when time doesn't really exist.
Right. So from one very strong military voice there, we definitely appreciate that. A little lift for everybody. Just want to remind you, coming up this week, when you have a full weekend of NASCAR racing for you here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. That starts on Saturday with the Pocono Organics 325.
The Poconos!
Yeah, they're racing in Pennsylvania this weekend. Coverage starts on Saturday at 12:30, and then we have back-to-back races for you on Sunday. That starts at 9 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, right after Silver and Black today. Xfinity Cup Series will kick things off on Sunday with the Pocono Green 225, recycled by J.P. Mascaro and Sons.
That's a very long banner.
It's a very long name,
yeah.
For sure. So Xfinity Series, check out driver Riley Herbst, local guy in that race. And then the Busch Brothers, we'll be racing later that day. Cup Series is back with a 1 o'clock start, the Pocono 350. Again, they're racing in Pennsylvania this weekend, and hopefully the weather stays nice. Yeah, NASCAR.
Feels like we're there. Now it feels like we're there.
Listen, besides golf and Premier League soccer, which really, if there's no championship to be had,
yeah.
then, you know, you're just kind of following your favorite team. Go Manchester United. Yeah.
Disney Plus, Hamilton's coming.
Right. Tony Cordasco joining in hour number two here as the sports conversations continue on this Friday here on The Playmakers.
35.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to the second hour of the Playmakers. It is June 26th of the year 2020, and I am joined by my co-host, as I am each and every day at 4 p.m., by Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what is up, my dude?
Oh, very busy sports day. Just in from UNLV Athletics, I just sent you over the info, too. Four student athletes tested positive for COVID-19, and so they will put a halt, at least momentarily, to the voluntary workouts on campus at least through July the 5th. So four tests positive for COVID-19.
And I'm sure they're just doing that, obviously, to take precautions, to figure out who crossed paths with who, and to get those infected isolated and away from the rest of the population. But obviously a very huge breaking news story out of the Valley here in Las Vegas, out of UNLV. How many players did you say tested positive, Dasco?
So four student athletes. It doesn't say sports, of course, and they are protected by the HIPAA.
Absolutely.
Policy. Yeah.
Well, sorry to hear that. Wishing anybody involved a quick and speedy recovery, but I'm sure this isn't necessarily a shock considering the amount of spikes that we're seeing across the country, but right here in Las Vegas as well. And, you know, I don't know what else to add there on that one, Dasco.
For sure. For sure. Can I also, I got a note here for tomorrow's Sports Beat, Saturday Sports Beat show. On the air from 8 to 9, 8:15, the professor, John Clayton, joins us. Clayton will have some inside NFL information, talk about the Raiders and more. Formerly the reporter, as you know, with ESPN. He now does sports talk on ESPN 710 in Seattle. He is a writer, NFL analyst, and enshrined in Canton, Ohio, in the writer's wing. So John Clayton, tomorrow morning at 8:15.
Big get, Dasco. Looking forward to hearing all of that from Clayton and yourself. And we also have to do our Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion of our segment, where you get to shamelessly self-promote one of your own tweets that you've already put out into the ethernet. Do you have one of those for us today, my friend?
Always. You can now listen to some newspaper stories instead of reading them yourself. We've become a lazy society. So this stems from, I was reading a story in the Orlando Sentinel, and I see this feature where you can now listen to the actual written story. So first, like, right, Lindsay, we had newspapers. They started with the number of words listed.
Yes.
On the social media stories. Oh, it's 523 words. Too many. I'm not reading that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step was that they timed out the story. So it's like, this will be a 2-minute read. Too short. I'm not reading that. What does it say, though, about people and their attention span in 2020?
Well, it may say something about the attention span, but I'd rather people pay attention to news stories or any articles in general and listen to them rather than just saying, I'm not going to read this at all and not learn anything.
But if it's too long or...
Well, it's like a podcast, Dasko. It's a podcast.
So you put the amount of time that the podcast is on. And if it's too long, you don't listen at all?
No. I'm just saying by having the ability to listen to the article being read rather than reading it yourself, you know, we're all kind of doing 10 things at once. Maybe you're cooking. Maybe you're playing video games. I do that a lot. But you still want to listen to something or take in some information. So it's a good way to multitask.
And it's the robot voice, by the way.
Yeah. Pronunciation might be a little off. Might be a little off. Well, good stuff, Dasko. I'm glad that you won't be using that feature, but you can leave that for other people like myself that tend to do way too many things at once.
Unless they hire me to do voiceovers.
Yes.
I'm not going to read it.
Story time with Dasko.
Or listen to it.
Right? No swearing, though. That's not allowed. Not allowed. Good stuff, Dasko. That wraps up our Don't At Me with Uncle Dasko portion of our segment here that always leads off our show. Because, Dasko, we love all of the musings that you put out on social media, so I'm glad we're able to share it with our listeners here. But it is time to move on to stick to sports, because sports and current events exist in the same reality, so we must talk about them because it is what is going on. And we have a kind of a mixed bag today of a few different stories across the sporting world. But we're going to start in the world of NASCAR, which obviously has had a crazy couple of weeks. This story coming to us out of North Carolina. A Speedway owner out of North Carolina is receiving a lot of backlash after advertising a Bubba rope on Facebook mimicking the alleged noose that was found in the NASCAR's only full-time black driver, Bubba Wallace's garage, earlier this week at Talladega Super Speedway in Alabama. Yes, Dasko, that's what
so
we're thinking.
So it's Bubba rope.
Yes, he is advertising. His name is Mike Fulp, the owner of the Half Mile 311 Speedway in Stokes County, North Carolina, advertised a rope that is now removed from the Facebook marketplace. But on his post, he wrote, buy your Bubba rope today for only $9.99. They come with a lifetime warranty and work great. What an absolute...
It's appalling.
It's appalling. It's disgusting.
It's just appalling. It's disgusting.
Disgusting.
They should shut down his track. People shouldn't go to his track. And then the governor, Roy Cooper,
exactly.
His PR director said that North Carolina is better than this. And the track was also promoting Heritage Night, mm-hmm. where you could purchase Confederate flags and hats. It's just appalling.
Well, and he even added at the end, don't forget a certain amendment at the Speedway as well. And as you said, appalling, disgusting, completely tone deaf, but I don't think he's really putting anything out there because he cares about the tone. But this is part of our grander stick to sports segment, and we're bringing up these stories because there's a lot of people saying, well, I don't know if systemic racism exists. I don't know if it's still here. I think it's a yesterday problem. It ain't a yesterday problem. It is not a yesterday problem.
I have to be honest with you. Even I'm afraid as a white guy to travel through the South.
Mm. Well, I
just don't feel safe. I never felt safe.
It would be hard for anybody to feel safe with someone like this.
Imagine.
And being a track owner and someone involved with the sport himself. As I said, Mike Fulp, the owner of the 311 Speedway in a small track in North Carolina. Just being an a-hole, basically. Just absolute.
Yeah.
I have nothing else to say about him other than good riddance and see you later. But
no, you know, and like sometimes people think it's funny and they'll go like too soon. No, this is like never. It's not like too soon. There's no jokes.
This isn't a joking matter anymore.
It's not a punchline. It's not a punchline.
Exactly. Let's move on to another example of the existence of systemic racism and how it has crossed over into the world of sports. We're going to go to the football world. Indianapolis Colts linebacker Darius Leonard retold one of his stories in the last couple of weeks where he was in a Chipotle, Dasko, with his family earlier this week, actually. And he got into an altercation, a verbal altercation, even though that really wasn't what was happening, because basically, as he was dining with his family, all of whom are non-white, at a Florence, South Carolina Chipotle, when the manager ordered them to leave, saying a white customer claimed that they were being verbally abusive. That allegation by the customer was a lie, Leonard said, and he went on to comment, "That's what being black in America is right now," he said in the video. "Us not even doing anything wrong, going out to eat with your family, just trying to spend a little bit of quality time. You can't even enjoy eating anymore." He said that the manager had a terrible attitude and made his party leave after threatening to call the police. As I said, Indianapolis Colts linebacker Darius Leonard was saying this to First Take on ESPN. And it's obviously, this shouldn't happen to anyone ever. But after the manager found out that Darius was who he was, which it shouldn't matter, clearly they were like, "Oh no, wait."
Then he wanted an autograph.
"Oh no, I didn't. It was you? Oh, really?" Absolutely inexcusable. And Chipotle CEO and chairman Brian Nickel came out and made a statement saying that there's zero tolerance policy for discrimination of any kind, and said that he had personally reached out to Darius and committed to ensuring appropriate action is taken once the investigation concludes. But that's the thing, Dasko. You have like big time businesses with the brands where they're like, "Yep, this is, we agree with the larger message, Black Lives Matter. That is 100% correct, and that's the right stance to take." But then it's a different thing in practice, and and there's individuals with their own beliefs and their own views, and it's just another example of someone being treated inequally in this society, and he happens to be an NFL player.
You know what's crazy is, so the world, you know, right now is on high alert,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is under a microscope, and you still have incidents at an alarming rate of police brutality and racism,
mm-hmm.
And on, and social injustices, whatever they might be. And people are being watched.
Right, so, and they're still
isn't that
doing
really,
it.
Right, and they're doing it at what appears to be a higher level than ever before. Of course, social media sometimes, you know, will fuel that. But at a level that is just like you would just expect people to take a step back, to pause, and to look in the mirror and to see if it's them, you know, who's causing these issues. But instead, they're producing Bubba rope and, you know, in the Chipotle, they're causing issues. And so the Colts, they released a statement today, too. And they said that Darius's experience, Darius Leonard we're speaking about, his experience demonstrates the struggles so many Black Americans and people of color face every day.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing. I don't necessarily, I think in Darius cases, in this incident's case, I don't think necessarily the people working at Chipotle or the people that were there that were causing this disturbance were necessarily stepping up their game. I think that's just existed and we're all just kind of waking up to it. And because we're all aware, because we're all looking out for this on social media, now we're finding out about it. But the other case, the one we talked about with the NASCAR guy just a few minutes ago, that is a straight up, you know what, I'm being told something I don't want to hear, so I'm going to double down on my message.
And I'm afraid that, you know, some of the NASCAR fans that can't get out of that mindset are going to start showing up when they finally can return to the
right.
Tracks.
Well, they were outside last week.
Yeah, outside and an airplane mm-hmm. Toting a Confederate flag, for crying out loud.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing. There's interactions in reality, in the physical world. And then that carries over, obviously, over to the social media world as well. And Donovan Mitchell, a star guard on the Utah Jazz, was praised by his head coach, Quinn Snyder, for using his social media platform to push for social justice and cited the negative feedback as proof that significant progress must still be made. Because when he posted this picture on Instagram with an image that read "Free-ish since 1865, honoring Juneteenth," that we celebrated last week, the holiday that commemorates the effective ending of slavery in the United States. In a tweet hours later, Mitchell questioned how fans could cheer for players but be so openly against their push for social justice. And I know that we don't have to go to Donovan Mitchell's account to see these comments. We see these comments on posts across the board, and it's not just racist posts. There's sexism, there's homophobia, there's a lot of hatred. 100 on the internet, and that's the thing. People, that's what's so confusing and so infuriating about people saying, well, this doesn't exist, or just let these things roll off your back. That's not how this works. You see that and when you read that and people are coming after you, and as Donovan Mitchell pointed out, and as many others have as well, why are you cool with me when I have a jersey on and not when I'm away from the court? Why are you cool with me being equal or celebrated here but treated less than everywhere else? And that's the real moral dilemma.
And they've had a lot of issues in Utah, mm-hmm. not singling out Utah, but as we know, Salt Lake City, predominantly white, and the white fans have they've had some instances.
Yep.
There was Russell Westbrook, right, who was he was called out by some fans, and that was a big issue.
That's right, because there's a physical altercation, right?
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
they're like, well, we're going to protect the fans, but not the player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then but Quinn Snyder has really stepped up and has done his part, and now he is a part of, I think he's a leader of the NBA Coaches Association Committee on Racial Injustice and Reform. And so they had this Zoom conference, and he said, you know, we're just going to keep this. I'm guessing it was with all the NBA coaches.
Yes.
Because they've been asked to make strides and develop a plan and to come up with some solutions. But he said, you know, let's just focus on social justice reform. Let's not talk basketball at this time.
Right.
And he just said that, you know, the fans, particularly in Utah, really need to educate themselves on social justice issues. And Quinn Snyder, he went out with his family. They were part of peaceful protest in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was such an eye-opener of, you know, all the issues that maybe he had never seen before. And it also was, you know, educational for his family
right.
as well.
No, it's a real eye opener. At least you're taking the wool away from some of the eyes of what your reality is, and realizing that just because you haven't experienced something or you haven't seen something that other people don't, that they haven't experienced something or that they're treated differently. And that's why it's important for us to stick to sports, Dasko, because as I said, as we lead it off, sports and current events exist in the same reality. So we have to talk about this. And these are all sports stories, and these all have to do with as an example of systemic racism. And these are some of the brightest talents, at least athletic talents in the Black community. So if not everyone is safe, no one is safe in that sense. And that's why it's important for us to talk about it, to highlight it, and to have that continued discussion as we all go through this kind of realization phase and work to be better as individuals and as a community in general. But Dasko, we are going to move on. And on the other side of the break, we're going to get into some random NFL nuggets. We had some news about the preseason, some games being cut down, and an interesting study that came down the wire this afternoon about penalties and who is getting the most penalized. We'll get into that on the other side of the break on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Welcome back to the Playmakers. Lindsey Brown and Uncle Tony Cordasco hanging with you guys until 5. And then it's the weekend time, my friends. Are you pumped, Dasko? Do you have any big plans other than that great guest that you have slated on tomorrow, Saturday Sports Beat?
Okay, so on Sunday night, Matt Lindsey, who's a good friend, will be on 90 Day Fiancé.
Well, he's a great last name, so I wish him nothing but the best. Nothing.
Are you a Frye person? Are you one of those people?
I don't know, Dasko. You tell me. Do I seem like a Frye person?
Today you do.
Oh, well, my energy.
Because you're kind of fired up. So
there's a little pep in the step today, Dasko, I will admit. But I'm not one of those people that will necessarily put a hashtag in front of that Frye. But for those of you that do, let it go. Let it fly. Let it fly all around. I'm here for it. We're all here for positivity here, Dasko. It's flying your Frye. There's frying. There's flying. There's lots of things. But some not so positive news, but not so negative news coming out of the NFL earlier this afternoon. Our sister station, Boston, WEEI, on the Ordway, Merloni and Faria show.
Christian Fourier?
Yeah, Fourier.
Christian Fourier.
Exactly, Dasko. Christian, who was a former tight end in the National Football League, basically said, I think that they will most definitely cancel two preseason games. What I heard last week when I was out of town was a big concern with the amount of time that they have to install everything and the amount of players they have to teach in the and the limited space they have to do all of this stuff. There are so many different variables, he said, and hell, you should probably push the season back. This is coming from a former NFL player. And so the NFL has been basically on a business as usual track because when the COVID hit, their season was done. The NFL draft was a little weird. We got to hang out with Roger Goodell in his basement for probably way too long. But for the most part, their schedule release, they definitely had some contingency plans to plan for stuff like this. But this is the first time we've seen them say, we're cutting things off, other than the cancellation of the Hall of Fame game that came down earlier this week between the Cowboys and Steelers. But now we have two more preseason games that are lopped off as well.
Yeah, they're going to take off two preseason games there's a bunch of reports out there too, in addition to Christian Fourier, and it looks like they'll just reduce the preseason to a couple of games. Fourier did make a good point, saying insulation, as you were saying, of offense and defense and teaching is going to take a lot longer because the groups that will be in meetings are going to have to be smaller. They're going to have to socially distance, you know.
Yep, and workflows disrupted, and you can do Zoom, but you might have to go through the information and the stuff a couple more times because some people are fine to retain information, but some people obviously need to be more in the room to ask questions. Just it's an easier uploading process in terms of the install of all the systems and whatever else. So it makes sense on a lot of different levels, but I think the first and foremost point is that you're pushing it back. That's less travel, less interaction between teams, and fewer opportunities for the virus to spread, at least in the earlier parts of the season.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, I thought that they had a lot of Zoom meetings and that they put in, you know, offenses and they went through, you know, a lot of their plans and whatever.
It's extensive, Dasco.
Yeah, but I get that. But I want to see them, how they're going to play or react on the field. And, you know, some of these players haven't done anything in a while. It's going to be a lot of out of shape players and preseason games. Yes. Although they could get you into football playing shape, you could also scrimmage every day and hit each other. And I like what Fourier said, though, pretty much like you can't have preseason games in a week or in a couple of weeks.
Right.
So it is the best thing to do to push it back.
Well,
to push it back.
In the large scheme of things, we know that the preseason games are A money grab to get butts in the seats and tickets sell.
And B, a money grab.
And B, but C, it's also, those are two games that players that, you know, are practice squad players or guys that are signed up for free agency or just trying to crack a roster for them to have an opportunity to show their stuff. And so there is a cost to this, and that comes back a little bit on the players. But in terms of what you're paying for then, which is obviously a higher level of safety, more time to get things together, and just more time to see how things kind of percolate around the country over these next few weeks, it makes sense why you would do that. And I hate preseason football. You're just kind of like, all right, we saw the guys we usually see for a hot second, and now it's just this. But football is football at this point, so it's definitely going to be missed. But I think it's definitely the right step to take in the NFL's case, and that doesn't happen very often, at least right off the bat.
Lindsay, I'm wondering, you know, of course they're going to shorten the preseason games, but with everything else that's gone on in this crazy world, will the games, when they finally kick it off, you know, the first couple of weeks, first week especially, will the games be sloppy? You know?
Yeah.
It's going to be sloppy.
They're sloppy in preseason if it's a normal year.
Right. But like by the third game, you're supposed to be playing your starting quarterback, for the first half?
First half, you know, depending on his injury history and how big of a gambling man the coach is.
How much they want to protect him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that second game, and you have to suspect that maybe perhaps more players than usual are going to be sitting out. Starters are going to be sitting out preseason.
But there is something to be said, that Dasco, as you alluded to earlier, of getting guys in pads, getting those reps, and that's absolutely part of the process of getting ready for the season. And as we know, football's a lot different than it was about 30 years ago when you were in two-a-days in 105-degree heat. You know, these guys aren't in pads every day in practice, and that's even more so the case now with the small groups, with all the precautions that are going to be taken. So maybe this might lead to some more sloppiness bleeding into the regular season. season past that first and second week where you kind of have teams that sometimes out of the gate stumble, but they get their things together. But maybe this will create a little bit more disruption. But everybody
the
has to deal with
it. Execution will not be good. Yep. It's not going to be good.
But everybody has to deal with the same circumstances here. And so that's just survival of the fittest. If you have the better team, the better talent, you should be the victorious every week, regardless of your level of preparation. But it's still something from the NFL, a little bit of change of direction, but nothing too crazy quite yet, but something we should definitely keep an eye on. And another thing that came down from the radio.com peoples, lots of sports knowledge to be found on there, the radio.com sports. There was a study conducted by Benjamin Rosenberg and Brent Levine of Psychology Today about ejections in the NFL and penalties. And they found that there's a potential racial bias in the NFL manifest through the frequency and of player ejections, because we see players get ejected all the time, Dasko. But the thing is, the breakdown of the league, it is 66.5% black population and 30.8% white. But the only white player that was ejected between 2017 and 2019 was Kiko Alonso. Everybody else, 95% of the objections from the game, or I should say not objections, ejections from the game, were black players.
So there's two things here. There, in the NFL, there's racial bias and there's also Raider bias. Those are the most penalized team.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but they cited implicit racial bias that could come into play when referees are evaluating certain penalties and determining whether or not they warrant an ejection. And I'm telling you what, Kiko Alonso, that one game, he got his money's worth. He got his money's worth.
Right.
He was with the Dolphins, and he actually got penalized twice in the game. They were playing Buffalo, and early on, he had an unnecessary roughness call, roughing the passer on Josh Allen, and that started a brawl. And then he hits a sliding Josh Allen, and that fuels a brawl, too. So he got actually two penalties. He could have been tossed on the first penalty. But in any event, in 2 years, just one white player was ejected.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's something wrong.
But
something does not smell right here.
Exactly, Dasko. But the key word that was mentioned earlier is that word implicit. There's implicit and explicit racial bias. Explicit is when it is overtly outside. Implicit is just, it's a system that you grew up in. It's the realization process that we're all going through right now is being like, well, my experience is this, but that doesn't mean it's the same for other people. And those are certain prejudices that are just that just naturally occur in all of us. But it's our job, our decision to not act on those, to not put those out in the world. But sometimes it bleeds over to this. And so I'm glad that this study was conducted. But the psychologists, as I said, Rosenberg and Levine, were very clear to mention that these findings were not meant to be an indictment on the NFL or all NFL referees, but just to say that these findings may suggest that there's an implicit racial bias in the league. And there are several factors that they took into consideration to make this study, you know, far from conclusive. This is the first one that we've really seen of its nature. But some of the reasons they listed were perhaps the ejections that occurred were all truly warranted based off the referee's discretion of the NFL rulebook, and all plays that did not result in ejections truly did not warrant ejecting any players involved. That's a possibility. But the NFL, this is the crazy part of this article, because the league said that they claim that this might be a case, though, but they think that game officials are typically accurate 97% of the time on their calls, which I'm like, we know that's not true. Half of the rule changes in the last 5 years have been about pass interference penalties and the refs not being able to make calls.
They're non-football fans.
Yeah.
They can't be football fans.
Right. And you're not going to get a perfect call every time, because they're on the field. They're making these calls in real time, and we are not perfect. We are human beings. We're going to make mistakes. But to say the referees are correct on 97% of their calls in this case, but then be up in arms about all the penalties with pass interference over these last couple of years, clearly those are two different narratives of the same story, and nobody's following that story arc at all.
It could be based on race. Majority of the crew chiefs are white.
Mm-hmm.
Although Super Bowl Live, the last Super Bowl, 5 of the 7 crew members were black.
Right.
And that huge disparity is something the NFL has to investigate. They also said, you know, and they took some other factors into consideration. Were there more black players on the field at the time of these ejections than white players? And they tried to make it as balanced as they possibly could.
Right.
Other than, you know, the one factor that you mentioned about officials being correct 97% of the time. But right. they did try to dig in, and they did take a lot of factors. But the league has to address this now, because these numbers, I mean, the figures are big. 67% black, 31% white ejections from 1991. Dating right. back to 1991.
Exactly.
So it's not like you have a small sample size. There's something wrong there.
Right.
Something's wrong.
And just because you didn't intend for this to happen doesn't mean that it's not happening. And so that's why to get offended by it and just be like, whoa, 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 get defensive about it. Don't get defensive. Just look to fix it. See where this is. And it's part of the scientific method. You know, check your facts. Do the analysis. Bring in other factors and other lens to view this, because it might not be as insidious as it seems to be, but there's clearly a disparity in that, and one that needs to be fixed, and one that really starts with having more black referees, having more representation in the front offices, in the owners, everything. It's all about that, because well, they're not going to, it's not like they're going to catch everything, but when you're making these rules, when you're putting policy in, you have to have all the voices represented. Otherwise, how are you going to know that this is a problem? Because they're not in the room to tell you, right?
I absolutely agree with
Common
you.
Common sense, baby. That's what we're here for, Dasko. That is what we are here to deliver.
We're solving these issues one by one. We're just
exactly.
knocking them down.
Exactly. Well, I had a little tweet from Colin Coward to get to, but we don't have a ton of time here. But he basically selected his five biggest arms in the NFL, and it's causing quite a stir
Oops.
On the old social media. Colin's top five arm talents. The first quarterback he lists is Russell Wilson. Very good arm talent. Tom Brady at number two. No argument there. Three, Drew Brees. Okay. Four, Kyler Murray. Puzzling. Five, Jared Goff. More puzzling, but the most puzzling omission, where's Patrick Mahomes? Where is he?
I mean,
did he retire?
When you look, yeah, he really missed by a country mile. Did he follow that up with any tweet? Because I saw a lot of folks had tweeted that out today.
Yep.
And it's like someone said, did Mahomes die?
Yeah.
Most lists have Mahomes ranked first.
Yes.
He has
and he's not even
the
on
best
it.
Arm strength. Right, right. At the very, you know, he could start an argument just by ranking him second. But Mahomes himself says that he feels that his arm is the strongest, but he also has good competition from Josh Allen. He thinks Josh Allen has a really good arm.
Yeah.
But Mahomes, the two-sport player, played baseball like his pops.
Mm-hmm.
He's by far got the best and the strongest arm in the NFL.
Right. And so is Russell Wilson. He's the same kind of baseball background, everything. But he's number one, and you don't even have Patrick Mahomes on there? That's crazy to me. It's just absolutely bonkers. But I'm not sure if Colin has backed away from it. I know that he doesn't have a tendency to do that with his really hot takes. I mean, you wanna get people riled up and to debate this on the social medias and for us to talk about this. But yeah, the omission of Patrick Mahomes is inexcusable. But even more so when you have Kyler Murray and Jared Goff down there. Like, I get
no,
it.
No. Kyler Murray's arm is really strong.
I know, but he's only
another
played
guy
for
that played
a
baseball.
Year.
Well, he's a baseball football guy, but he's got a really, really strong arm.
Mm-hmm.
But Josh Allen is not on that list.
Yeah.
And Mahomes says that they're neck and neck in their competition.
Right. And that's what I mean.
You don't even consider him.
Yeah. Colin probably thinks that the NFL referees are right 97% of the time, too. Honestly.
That's going to be his next meme there.
Yeah. Right on, Dasko. Well, it is time for our last break of the show. And on the other side, after we take a few minutes to breathe, we are going to preview or at least compare Alexis Lafreniere, who is the top prospect in the NHL draft. The NHL lottery draft is tonight. So we're going to do some comparisons there and do our cheer segment as well. We'll do that right after the break here on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Final few minutes of the Playmakers for the week. It is Friday, June 26th, and Dasko, at 5 p.m., right after we get done with our show here, the NHL Draft Lottery is going to be going getting after it, I guess, at 5 p.m. on NBC Sportsnet and the NHL Network. The phase one, obviously, there's a little bit different of a draft lottery plan for this year because of the Rona.
I have no idea. I tried to follow. I have no clue what they're doing with this.
Well, basically, you have the worst of the worst teams, which are the Detroit Red Wings, the Ottawa Senators, the Sharks, but their pick is gone away because they traded for Erik Karlsson, so the Senators get their pick as well.
What about the Devils? Are the Devils
the
in
Devils
the
are in it.
That was
the
team,
Kings.
That's a team I picked to win the Stanley Cup.
As I said, in terms of the best odds to secure that number one overall pick, the Detroit Red Wings lead that with 18.5% chance to get that. And then Ottawa, 2 and 3. The Kings, the Ducks at 5, the Devils, and the Sabres. And then 8 through 15 are all basically holder places right now because those include teams that are going to be participating in the qualifying rounds when the NHL kicks off their season resumation. But basically, if the really bad teams tonight get picked in the lottery, this is going to be the only draft lottery. But if one of these placeholder teams gets picked for those top three spots, then they're going to have to do a second phase. And I know it's confusing. And it took me a while to kind of explain it to myself. And I don't even know if I did it justice, but that is what we're going to do. But there's a big prize on the line this year. Alexis Lafreniere is the top rated prospect, one that is everybody's vying to have the ability to pick with that number one overall. But there's an article in The Athletic today by Craig Kustance comparing Alexis as a number one overall pick, or at least potential he is right now, with the previous years over the last decade or so. And just to refresh everybody's minds, last year we had Jack Hughes, who was drafted by the Devils. The year before that, 2018, Rasmus Dahlin went to the Buffalo Sabres. 2017, the Devils selected Nico Hershier. 2016 was Toronto with Austin Matthews. 2015 was Edmonton with someone called Connor McDavid. Never heard of him. 2014, Florida with Aaron Ekblad, Nathan MacKinnon in 2013. And we'll get to the rest of the names as well. But what Craig did was ask executives from across the league to rank these guys just 1 to 10 and who's the best first overall pick. And I don't think it's going to surprise anyone that Connor McDavid is at the top of that list for most the best number one overall draft pick. Any argument from you there, Dasko?
No, and then also Austin Matthews, you know, got some votes and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
One executive had Lafreniere as, if you put all these players, you know, into the hat,
mm-hmm.
one of the executives had Lafreniere ahead of all these players.
Which is a little much, especially when you have Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews in that conversation. But as
Taylor Hall. Taylor Hall's in there, too,
well,
right?
Well, Taylor Hall's at 10, Dasko. That's the thing. But trust me, we'll get into exactly why he's at 10. But let me just list these off the way that Craig did. Number one, Connor McDavid. Number two, Austin Matthews. Number three, Nathan MacKinnon. Number four, Rasmus Dahlin. Number five, that's when Lafreniere makes his debut there. Jack Hughes at number six, Aaron Ekblad at 7, Hershey at 8, Ryan Nugent Hopkins at 9, and Taylor Hall at 10. And I know that Taylor Hall, he won a Hart Trophy within the last 5 years. He's probably the biggest fish on the free agency market this summer, and it has obviously been a huge storyline in the NHL this season, being traded from the Devils to the Arizona Coyotes. But the thing is, Dasko, is that he's a winger, and as impactful he is and as good of a hockey player he is, there are certain positions that are valued more in the NHL, and one of those positions that has never been valued more is the center position, that first centerman position, and their ability to control play, not just as offensive threats, but as a defensively responsible player as well. And I'm not saying that Taylor Hall isn't defensively responsible, but he doesn't play the position that is nearly as important as a first line center or a first pair defenseman.
Yeah, they said Lafreniere was he was the World Junior MVP, and
he's nasty.
Yeah, he is pretty nasty. And could you imagine him, though, on the Devils, on the line with either Nico Hershier or Jack Hughes?
I can't, but and as much as they've been able to stockpile talent on that team with the Devils, clearly they had much higher hopes for the season. They were one of my dark horse picks before the season started, because remember they have PK Subban on that team. As I said, Taylor Hall was there, but
they laid a big
they fired their coach, you know, right before they played the Golden Knights in New Jersey. But Alexis Lafreniere would be a huge addition to that team. But there are so many teams that really need the help, including a lot of divisional opponents here on the Pacific side. It would be a real shame if he ends up in a Sharks jersey, or he wouldn't end up in a Sharks jersey. But between the Detroit Red Wings, the Ottawa Senators, and the Kings, those are your top three teams. Because as I said, the Ottawa Senators own that that pick from the San Jose Sharks that they received for Erik Karlsson. But I think the best place for me that I want Lafreniere to land on is Detroit, because the league is better, the league is healthier when the Detroit Red Wings are a perennial power. And they need a lot more than him, but it's a good start.
TSN's Craig Button, Canada's NHL scouting director, said that there's no doubt that Alexis will step into the league and score 60 or more points in his first season. They don't think he's going to be in the minors.
Well, not a lot of number one overall picks are.
Well, I get it, but wow, that's a lot of pressure.
That's a lot of pressure.
He's a good finisher, a good finisher.
Great skater.
The USA game, he had the equalizer, right? Mm-hmm. Tied up the game. He's a primetime player, very, very clutch player.
Right.
And he's so accurate with his shot. Oh, my goodness.
Well, and the thing is, too, that is kind of absent from some other number one overall picks in the past, or just young guys. Like you said, they're 18 years old stepping into the league. And Jack Hughes, while he's an unbelievable talent, he's a really small kid. And as we know, most guys don't really finish growing until their mid-20s. He's going to have to fill out and put on some weight.
Lafreniere's what, about 6'1", what, 190?
He's already ready to go, just kind of how Austin Matthews was, where it's like, yeah, you're a fully grown human being the second you stepped in here. And some people are just win the genetic lottery that way. But it should be interesting to see where that first overall pick falls. As I said, the teams that are the worst that are vying for that top pick, the Detroit Red Wings, the Ottawa Senators, the Los Angeles Kings, the Ducks, the Devils, and the Sabres. But that is all kicking off at 5 p.m. on NBCSN and NHL Network. And my eyes will be glued, Dasko. That is for darn sure.
Same here. Same here.
Right on, my dude. Well,
they'll be facing off at 5, not kicking off.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there, Dasko. I'm proud of you. Very proud of you. We always like to end our show on a good note with some positive vibes. So it is time to move on to our cheers portion of our show, where we hoist our metaphorical glasses, our tall, our small, our litten, our bitten, to something or someone somewhere that is good and bright. So, Dasko, who are you cheersing for positivity today?
A woman, and I don't know her name, but for his 73rd birthday, Pastor Bill Lasasso's daughter got him a fun gift. She rented an ice cream truck from Crazy Ice Cream, and he would often reminisce to his family how he spent one day when he was younger driving an ice cream truck and all the joy that he had doing that. So his daughter, we don't know her name. For some reason, I even Googled it. I looked at, like, TV video reports.
I feel like that should be included, considering the story is about her. Interesting.
Right?
Representation matters, doesn't it, Dasko?
You know, and this is what happens when you press that button and you have to listen to the story, okay? They leave out the facts, okay?
Okay.
So anyway.
Press
so
your silence button on your phone before you continue.
It was someone calling with her name, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
So anyway, so he wore gloves and a mask, and he was thrilled to bring smiles to the several people's faces, especially children. They went into an area where some of the kids said they hadn't seen an ice cream truck in their neighborhood in over a year and a half.
Wow.
So in any event, he founded something called the Florida Dream Center, and he works with hopeless situations, he said. And so he brought some ice cream out to neighborhoods. And I really wanted to shout out the Pastor Bill Lasasso's daughter, but it's nowhere to be found. And if you Google it and find it, then call me on the air, just like that one person.
No, to people. Women have names. So let's write them down, especially when they're being recognized for doing something good.
Google the story.
Being represented in any way.
Right? And you'll find nowhere. I tried to find a Facebook page, anything.
Yeah. Yep. tis par for the course. Another one of those realization moments that we're all having. Lots of changes to be made, Dasko. But good stuff, and cheers to that family and that great thing that she did for her dad. And then her dad took those great feelings of positivity and obviously spread that around by bringing ice cream back to the neighborhoods and spreading some joy around there. Good stuff. And Dasko, for me, we're really going out of left field here today for my cheers portion, or at least my selection, because I'm cheersing a baseball team, which hasn't exactly been in the cards over the last few weeks, around baseball in general. But the San Francisco Giants, we got into this a little bit earlier with Paul in our check down, but they're getting a little creative to help create an experience at the ballpark without fans. The 2020 Major League Baseball is finally set to get underway next month, but obviously no fans are going to be there. So what the Giants are doing is that they sent a letter to their season ticket holders on Thursday, explaining that their games held at Oracle Park will be played without fans, but they asked the season ticket holders to send them images of themselves, cardboard cutouts essentially. They'll be placed in front of their usual seats in the stands. The team is calling it the Giants Fan Cutout Program, which isn't exactly one that sticks in the head with a jingle, but the gesture itself, Dasko, and just getting creative and finding a way for fans to engage with their team, with the product that they want to be a part of by doing that. And it's a small gesture, and Paul was very concerned about them flying away. I think any that would be actually really funny. It maybe create a viral moment that baseball desperately needs. Or maybe a foul ball will go take off somebody's cardboard head. But nonetheless, anytime people are getting creative, being innovative, I got to cheers them. And it just happened to be a baseball team and sports related today. But, you know, I've seen crazier things, Dasky. I've seen crazier things.
Some of the baseball players, right, can't sit in the dugouts. So some of them are going to have to sit spaced out in the stands. Did you know that?
No, I kind of knew that, but you just reminded me. But maybe they can help hold them down.
106.
They're human seatbelts. 106
of 108.
Well, good stuff, Dasko. I hope that you have an excellent and awesome weekend. And thanks to Mark. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to you, Dasko. And thanks to all of you for hanging with us. We'll be back Monday, 3 to 5. But until then, stay safe, be well, and wear your damn masks. Bye!
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.